Hello, and after a hiatus for various reasons, welcome back to Infield Chatter. I don't know how to number this episode because 2 weeks ago we recorded an episode with Meg Rowley of Lookout Landing.
It was fantastic.
It was really good.
It
was great, except you won't be able to hear all of it because of technical difficulties. But I think I'm going to add on to the end of this episode the good 15 minutes we got, just because it should be heard out in the world. And, and then last week, Devin was on vacation, and the other two of us couldn't be arsed. That's pretty much it. So, I'm joined by the same two ragtag band of ragtag... wow, that was like a theater exercise war, but ragtag band of ragtags. Red, leather, yellow, leather.
Aluminum, linoleum, aluminum, linoleum, aluminum, linoleum.
We have, you've heard his voice around here, the aforementioned Devin Jessup. Say hi, or say how you are,
yo.
Or say whatever. What an intro. And of course, we have, from Scottsdale, Arizona, possibly the future home of the Arizona Diamondbacks, segue, we have Soko.
Sorry, what? Sorry? I can't hear you. What? I'm going. No.
I think we just got sucked a bit. we're recording this Thursday night, March 24th. Just telling you as context because earlier today a bomb dropped, which is good for our podcast because, you know, we had 50 minutes ready about who the fifth starter should be, but that was all scrapped for... it was leaked and then confirmed by all parties involved that the Diamondbacks aren't—they're not too happy about Chase Field. It's mostly maintenance, and they are looking to possibly get out of their lease. Do I have that all right? I just have the summary in front of me.
Yeah, that's basically. I think the part of it, from what I read, was that Maricopa County is kind of shrugging and saying that they don't think they're going to be able to afford the renovations that they're scheduled to have or on track to have. I'm not exactly positive.
Yeah, I mean, basically the county did a report where they wanted to see how much not even just renovations, but how much sort of routine maintenance that they were going to need to do. And then the figure that came back was genital sucking hard. So they decided that they didn't really want to do that. And I guess the Diamondbacks were like, well, you're supposed to. But there's also, like, I've seen references, like, I don't know, who knows what's actually true, but seen references that the Diamondbacks basically offered, well, why don't we just get our own private investor to help with these renovations? You guys don't have to do anything. And the county was still like, no. But that could be hearsay.
I have a hard time believing a professional sports team would like, huh, private phones? Yeah, let's do that. Maybe I'm just being cynical.
And also hard to believe that a governmental entity would be like, no, we don't need extra money. No, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, we got
cool.
this.
Cool.
We got this.
Well, it's not like it would be extra money for the county. I mean, it's
well, but
potential
I mean,
renovations that they weren't going to pay for anyways. So it's not like that's going to magically give them extra money that they can then go build a school with or something.
I don't know. What kind of renovations were they planning?
Something to the tune of almost $200 million.
Well, no, but I'm saying, what like, were they planning to build a school in there? They've already got a gym, right? Like,
they got a gym, a few restaurants, Yasmani Tomas, you know,
as gym coach.
Yeah, why not? I mean, like you said in our previous episode, he's less huggable now, but he's sort of got the build of a a gym coach who really loves dodgeball. I don't know why that pops in my head.
I mean, to me, the gym coach who always comes to mind is the guy from Freaks and Geeks, who I think was the guy from the Back to the Future movies as well. But I mean, he has that look of a gym coach, and yeah, I could definitely see Yasmani Tomas in like the unnecessarily short shorts and the t-shirt that comes down to not far enough on his arms.
Sorry, play a dramatic reading. Apparently, my internet thought today was a good day to die hard.
It's all good. I was about to do dramatic reading.
Did you guys? How long
we could wait on that?
How did you guys go before you realized I wasn't there?
Okay, so obviously this all went down today, and the Diamondbacks and Maricopa County are so over each other. You know it. Snap, snap, snap. But how much of this is, you know, would you guys say in your expert or non-expert opinions that this is maybe a tactic by the Diamondbacks to sort of, you know, get this thing that they want, you know, and it's not that dire, or is it really like Chase Field is going to turn into Beyond Thunderdome by 2020?
Well, I'm personally in favor of it turning into Beyond Thunderdome. I think, I mean, that would be, that just seems like the logical extension of where the Diamondbacks-Dodgers rivalry has been going for the past few years.
And to be fair, if it takes till 2030 for it to turn into the Thunderdome, the lease will already be over.
That's true. That's true.
I wasn't really.
I think I said 2020, but so I was being very aggressive.
You know, I mean,
I think
we can't just expect Thunderdome to happen. We have to, that's the sort of thing you have to go out and make happen. Believe in Thunderdome within yourself.
Bootstraps.
Yeah. My first thought when I saw this article was, okay, is this an actual thing or is it a negotiating tactic? I mean, because really, like, where else are they going to go? There's always a chance that, there's always a chance they could sucker the city of Glendale into another stupid sports facility. I don't doubt that.
Stop trying to make Glendale happen, Gretchen. But
sure, I mean,
Glendale's not going to happen.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm sure the first step would be that it is some sort of negotiating ploy. You know, they wanted, a few years ago, they wanted less seats. I'm sure there's other sorts of renovations they wouldn't mind having. It sounds like there's basic upkeep, especially with the roof and the AC, that needs to get done. And maybe even just simply having some sort of amendment to their lease where they exchange taking care of the renovations themselves for less remaining years. That way, because I mean, it takes a while to build something. It takes a while to plan something. So unless they've have a cabal of secret architects and developers at Chase Field that have been working away for a new stadium, if they need to start planning, then it's still going to take probably 5 years.
Yeah,
for really to get going, especially if they're not going to. Well, if they use public money, that's still going to take a little while to get lined up. Especially if they want to get private financing, you know, it's going to take a little while to get this going. So maybe this exchanges less time on their lease for them taking care of the renovations or something to that effect as some sort of settlement. It will probably be hard for them to get out of their lease otherwise. But, yeah. I'm sure the long-term play, which is really not that long-term at this point, is some sort of significant upgrade or a new stadium.
Yeah, you're talking about they wanted to lessen the capacity, which I guess I could kind of get, because, you know, if you go to any, you know, game at Chase Field within the past, you know, since, you know, 2002 or whatever, the third deck is, you know, a barren
knives, coyotes, and somebody waving flags around.
Of knives and coyotes, so...
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the stadium was built...
Interchangeable, in my mind.
...in a time when people really did kind of want more bigger and better stadiums, and they may not have known yet what the market was here, because they probably kind of looked at the population and its projected growth and said, well, okay, we should be able to sustain this, and maybe didn't realize that 10 years in the line, it was still going to be more of a mid-market team. So,
I'm looking at right now just a Wikipedia list of the highest capacity stadiums. It's U.S. baseball stadiums. I was wanting MLB, so it goes beyond the everything. But I will say that the lowest capacity professional stadium they have listed
there you
is
go.
Bob Warren Field in
if
Terre
I recall,
Haute, Indiana.
Chase Field,
so,
I think,
you know,
is
check
the
that
sixth
out.
Largest MLB field.
Correct. Yep. Ahead of it, in reverse order, at 5, it's New Yankee Stadium, which is
Dodger Stadium
exactly 1,009 more people, I should say. Turner Field is 4.
R.I.P.
Turner Field kind of, you know, relates to this subject. I want to get into that a little later. Coors Field
also,
is 3.
I'm just going to take a second
Oco
here
Coliseum
to
is 2, and Dodger Stadium is
disparage
1.
You for your Ameri-centric views, because the Rogers Center is also larger than Chase Field. They're stadiums outside of America, okay? Come on.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking up list of MLB
whatever
stadiums.
Whatever, Yankee Doodle Dandy.
I clicked on the first link. It said
I don't know
US
why
stadiums,
I'm making fun
but...
of you for being an American. It's not like I'm not either.
Right.
But yeah.
You're not the king of Canada yet.
Someday.
But obviously, Dodger Stadium is old, its own thing, and they thing they sell out all the time.
And they're obviously trying to desperately get out of that.
Oakland, that's its own weird boondoggle. Turner, Yankee Stadium, as we talked about with Nick on our last episode, is its own, again, weird.
I mean, I argued half of the point in an article that went up today, depending on when this episode drops, so maybe it was a few days ago. So then it was a few days ago that the article which by this point means that it's been buried about 3 or 4 pages back.
Harken back to the archives of the old easy snake pit.
But I would think going smaller would also just work better for the Diamondbacks, given the market size. It would look better just from watching it on TV, you know, instead of looking at what looks like a half-empty stadium and thinking to yourself, do I really want to go to a game there?
Yeah, it's different watching it on TV and then going to any random game in person. It's because it does feel, when you're like actually sitting in one of the lower bowls, it does feel more full, using quotation figures here, if that makes sense. It's a feel thing. I don't know. Sorry, continue.
Okay. No, continue with what?
Oh.
Did you die again?
Okay. No, I didn't. Okay. I did not necessarily have more to that point.
Oh, I
know. The one point that I was going to... One thing I was going to point out is in that list of stadiums that are larger than Chase Field, I mean, you do have
Michigan Stadium,
Los Angeles, Major League Baseball stadiums that are larger than Chase Field. I was going to say, you do have Los Angeles, you've got New York. I mean, they are larger markets. You've got, I mean, Atlanta's not that much bigger than Phoenix. Yeah,
and Turner Field was built as
Atlanta
that's
about a million more people in the metropolitan area, but it is also an older team. And then I don't know. There's Denver, whatever. But I mean, so I feel like it is. What?
You've got. I was going to say, you've got Run Grotto first to base.
I feel like you're wandering away from a point that I'm trying to make, and I'm rapidly forgetting. No, I was just saying that the larger stadiums, it seems like a lot of them do service larger markets than the Diamondbacks. So, I mean, it does feel like it was built a little bit out of.
Yeah, it and Coors Field were likely built with sort of a little bit of fantasy, maybe.
That's true. I mean, they were both built mid to late 90s, so it was probably built with the same ideals in mind.
Dingers.
And I will say that the lowest capacity park at MLB, at least according to this site, is Marlins Park, which I think is the newest stadium in Major League Baseball. So, you know, when Jeff Loria tore down the Orange Bowl and, you know, has the taxpayers of Miami paying for this until the reckoning and the robot revolution, you know, maybe there was something to consider there. But, yeah. I get, you know, wanting to decrease the stadium size stuff. It just feels weird that, them going public with this is at least partly a negotiation ploy. Because, and I wonder, again, kind of getting back to Atlanta, if maybe the threats of a new stadium somewhere else in the area, not I hope in the area, because that would be another depressing thing, is maybe they were emboldened by the Braves basically building a white flight field in Cobb County. You know, maybe because that.
I mean,
that was
but I mean,
table.
Where are they going to go? Are they going to like build it in
Casa Grande?
Is Casa Grande even Pima County?
No, it's Pinal.
It's Pinal. Either way, I'm sorry. Either way, it's not Maricopa, but I'm like, are they going to build one over Pinal in another county?
Counties wouldn't be a good
some city council member in Flagstaff or Prescott is slowly just sliding his proposal into the shredder as he listens.
I mean, there's a couple ways to do it. One would be look for empty land in the first place. And yes, Phoenix might be a low density city compared to some other places, but it's still largely filled up, especially in the middle portions. There are some empty parcels, but they're generally pretty small. They're definitely not big enough to just build a baseball stadium on.
Unless you want to go out to Surprise. Nobody wants to do that.
Well, I mean, there are areas in the city, but a lot of them are also owned by the state or by the city of Phoenix and so on. So those are generally being held in trust with the assumption that they're going to be used to help fund education.
Now, just so we're on the same page, you're talking about within the city of Phoenix proper rather than
the overall
Phoenix
area, say Phoenix Metro or the metro area.
Okay. Okay, yes. I'm just making.
So
I figured
Chase Field has
about,
like a
sure
footprint of about, I think it's about 11 or 12 acres.
Sorry, continue.
It's a little bit over large in some ways because it has the AC units, but you would anticipate you would need that same sort of size. It's currently sitting on a parcel that, if I recall, is about 22 or 24 acres. There's just not a lot of them that exist in the middle of Phoenix or in the middle of populated portions of the metro area, but there is an area that has lots of open space, is close to transportation, is close to population centers, especially the ones that likely are where most of the ticket base is, and that is where the 101 and the 202 meet, which is on the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community. So, I mean, there's hundreds of acres there. Hundreds. and they obviously already have some sort of pre-existing business relationship. So if I was the Diamondbacks, that would probably be the first place I would look. Now, that doesn't mean that they will be able to negotiate anything there that will be favorable to them. You know, it's certainly possible that the community will say, yeah, we're interested in having a stadium, but we're not going to pay for it because we already paid for Salt River.
Yeah, like that was the first place that was the first thing I thought of too was, I mean, if you're going to build a new stadium, like reservation land, it's the 101 and the 202 was one of the first places. Also, even though it would never work, I was thinking there's a parcel of land right by Westgate where the Coyotes and the Cardinals play. Oh my goodness! That one of the Indian tribes owns, and they wanted to build a casino there, and it's like basically a big square mile of land. And I mean, if the Diamondbacks really wanted to take a long shot and go out to them and be like, hey, what if we build this out here too? But
my thing with that is, well, I guess if it's on that's different. But if they try to go anywhere else, I can't imagine Glendale they'd be
also,
up for that.
Like Glendale also, this kind of gets glossed over because everybody looks at the Coyotes. But I mean, I think a lot of people forgot that when the Diamondbacks and the Rockies were starting out at Salt River, Glendale also had built their stadium for the White Sox and the Dodgers, and Glendale kind of botched that deal, at least at the start. I haven't heard much about it lately, but I mean, I know that they made some pretty big mistakes that cost them money in arranging that. Glendale should know. Like, Glendale should not ever be allowed to build another stadium, anything for like the next 20 years. But I mean, yeah, like not in on the city land, but that parcel of land that the tribe has. It was just one of the possibilities that came to mind, and I mean, I feel like that would probably be a better situation, but I mean,
well, the second possibility, which I mentioned the first one,
about
find empty land already exists, which there's not a lot of, which you could see if you look at any sort of satellite map. There's just not a lot, or where there is in like Southwest Phoenix is industrial barren wasteland.
Yeah, no.
So you don't want to build there.
Yeah,
no one wants to see a game. No one wants to be there late at night. It's not where you want to be. But the other idea would be, okay, and this happens with other stadiums, is you say, okay, these are existing parcels that may already have existing structures on them. We will essentially tear down these structures. We will get the parcels replatted, so that way there's only one parcel, or maybe we'll build over multiple parcels, if it doesn't really matter. That's what they did in San Diego. And I think, if I recall, in Minnesota, they had to demolish some things, and they had to demolish some things for Chase Field too. I mean, if you go back and look at satellite images from like 92, there were streets underneath where parts of Chase Field were, and there was like a historical warehouse and other sorts of things. So just because, I mean, Chase Field itself was not on a continuous parcel, so that is certainly a possibility. It's still hard for me to look at the downtown area and say, okay, there's any set of parcels that would make sense. They're either going to be too expensive, or you're going to be doing probably politically unhealthy things like basically buying people's homes or trying to force them out.
Yeah, it seems like adding, like trying to coalesce land together that's already occupied.
Well, that's what happened.
It's just an entirely added layer of difficulty and it's a bunch of different negotiations you'd have to do at the same time and get them all to work out.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking. You're talking about, you know, the 101 and 202. You were mentioning it was near transportation, which I think unless they really don't give a shit, like with the Braves. Well, if it's somewhere near transportation, that's, you know, probably smart. Well, with the Braves, their season ticket base is in one place, and there is actually not any public transportation, as I recall reading, going up there, because people who live up there are not too thrilled.
I don't know what
demographics
exactly
that are
you might
downtown
be referring
and they don't
to
want
in
them
some sort
up
of
there. That's as probably
relations
polite a way as I can
a
put
southern
it,
states.
What could possibly an all-white suburb possibly be against? I don't get it. In the South, especially.
Yeah, in downtown Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's more, you know, the downtown Atlantans not going up to Kennesaw or wherever, but,
Yeah, the reality is there's not
but,
a lot of
you know, if they build somewhere
public
near public transportation,
Phoenix,
you can at least
so
say, okay, it's not.
It's like, oh, you want to build it on the light rail line, so you have a 3-mile stretch that that's going to work? Woohoo!
Good point. And two core.
Most of it's by ASU, so good luck trying to build there.
Yeah.
Build a take the ASU's old stadium and just build more decks on it. That works.
Yeah, but the only reason why ASU's they play there is because they're actually going to demolish the old stadium and because
they play
basically
they play
it
out and redevelop
it
now, right? At yeah, that's what
no.
Redevelop it into the new Diamondback Stadium. Come on, work with me, people. No, I'm kidding. That, you know, that wouldn't be tenable for many reasons. But they did the same thing down at U of A with their old baseball stadium when they moved to High Corbett. Yeah. They turned it into like a bunch of.
Well, it's a good thing you're not like I don't know recording a podcast.
Of other, I can't talk, but yeah. Oh, it's a good thing I can edit if I want to, but That's another thing. I kind of draw myself to the Atlanta parallel because there's a lot of things that sort of reek of this just because of that's where you probably have to build and et cetera, et cetera. But something interesting to me as a hypothetical is that if Chase Field is vacated because
my suggestion is
agreements and they
build we bring
a new
in
stadium,
the Thunderdome post apocalyptic paintball. Yeah.
I would think if Chase Field was to be vacated, the only thing you really could do is demolish it. Because upkeeping it, there's probably no combination of events that you could have at it that couldn't be better served at the arena next door. That'll be worth the upkeep.
Yeah, I'm thinking. I'm actually reading right now because again, I'm just going back to Atlanta. Georgia State football is going to be using Turner Field from next year on, so at least that building gets some use. But I can't think
I'm
of.
Sorry,
like,
are you guys not enthralled at Chase Field, home of the Cactus Bowl?
But that's one game. And you're sure they have monster truck rallies and a few other things that go on, but that's not enough to fill an entire year to make it worth it. No. And there could be get to a point where you say, okay, well, what if we demolish this and put up some sort of call for development offers and, you know, let professional developers take a crack at that corner? I mean, a big problem being that given that the parcel it's on is so large now that there is no room nearby it to effectively redevelop that area. But if Chase Field didn't exist, that would be a lot of space that could be used for who knows what, but a wide variety of things, used components that would make that area have more variety.
I guess there's a I'm just trying to think of like of the area around Chase Field, other than that restaurant next door.
No, you can't. I mean, its location is bound in a way that makes it nearly impossible to develop next to it. Even at the time that they built the thing, to the east is an elevated 7th Street. You're not going to build anything there. To the north, it was an empty parcel, but they built it into a parking garage, partially because MLB has stipulations on how many parking spots have to be within a certain amount of radius of the stadium, so that was part of the agreement. They needed to build additional parking. To the west is more parking and an arena, so you're not going to change out that. And then to the south is railroad tracks and then industrial wasteland. So it's pretty much it's stuck in a corner where nothing can reach it.
Yeah.
And there's other parts of downtown, especially when you get closer to Cityscape and then just north of downtown. There's a lot of cool stuff that's happening and it's starting to develop. Maybe not as much as other cities that have had more time, but for Phoenix, it's pretty good. But that portion and what is going on there can virtually not touch Chase Field or get really close to Chase Field because of those barriers.
Yeah, I don't know. This all seemed to, you know, without internally knowing the machinations of, you know, the county and the team, it seemed to come out of nowhere because I was naive enough to believe, oh, the building's less than 20 years old, everything will be fine. This is not something that's going to come up. And I'm betting there's like, you know, fans of the Athletics or
team is threatening
really,
to leave
really
your perfectly
making
acceptable stadium, but they're not
right
actually
going to
leave
this?
The city. Boo hoo. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely all a moot point. It's probably not going to move that quickly. The Diamondbacks may not even be able to or even want to get out of their lease until they go through that court date. So it's going to be one of those, well, we'll see what happens, because it could be just negotiating ploy. Maybe they do stay in the downtown area. Maybe they do move out. Maybe they do find an investor to help do those renovations. Yeah, it just doesn't. It's not going to move probably that quickly. And I guess the good thing is like if they doesn't move quickly, that's not a bad scenario. It's not like they're stuck in a terrible, poop ridden stadium like Oakland.
Yet. Yeah. Ah, literally. And, you know, it's Chase Field to me feels location wise in Phoenix, you know, it's again there's not much around it, but it's easy to get to, at least, you know, comparatively speaking to other places. You know, it's right smack in the middle of the, you know, the I-10, I-17 little box, and you know, it's not the prettiest stadium, but there's decent sight lines, and I've said this before, but I enjoy watching a game at Chase more than
surprisingly
I watching a
something
game at Fenway
that you actually have to say
I can
about
fit in the
stadium.
Seats and there's no freaking pillars blocking my view. So, you know. Yes. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's also something to keep in mind.
You know, I guess
that
what you hope for is that they come to an agreement.
A lot of time, if it does
the stadium,
actually end up in a real suit. Most of the time, the outcome of legal proceedings is a settlement. The same way that, yes, the extreme option is the Diamondbacks find a new place in the Phoenix metro area to play instead, and Chase Field becomes a ghost town. But that's sort of an extreme option, and I'm sure both of them, the county, the city, everyone involved, is going to want to cut some sort of middle person deal, because it's going to be. It's going to take a ton of time, and it's going to take a ton of money to move somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, it already, honey.
And plus,
it just will get worse.
You have to also factor in that it'd be kind of a PR nightmare, too.
Yeah, I mean,
it already is, but, you know, multiply that by
especially after that, the uproar in the original funding for the stadium and everything about that, and then to be like, 18 years later, not really a fan. But
yeah.
And, you know, it is, you know, maybe the team is coming from you know, a valid point of, you know, a valid sticking
maybe,
point.
Maybe
you
that's
also
the problem. Maybe they don't have enough
other efforts.
Maybe
you're
they
the
want to replace, like, the left field bleachers just with one huge you know? Pool.
Maybe they looked at that team in Texas. Was it Frisco that has a lazy river now around their stadium, or is going to? You guys seen that?
I have not, but I am fascinated.
There's a minor league team that's going
Frisco
to
Frisco Rough Riders.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm going to look that up right now.
Let's do this. It says here that it'll hold 68,023 gallons of water, which apparently is equal of 1,088,368 cups of nacho cheese. Nacho cheese slide, people!
I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Whoa! It all comes together. I hope, you know, if it gets bad, I just hope that they get to the point where they come out with, like, an absurd stadium rendering.
Oh God!
Just to see what they come out with, because you saw that.
Yeah.
The football team in Washington D.C. came out with a. Yeah, that stadium that idea with a moat, like a literal moat. Yeah, with somebody surfing on it. Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, I am a fan of that sort of thing. So, you know,
or it's there's like a giant snake head next to the stadium, and the roof is its tongue. Yeah.
I like it. I like it. What about
or maybe they make two words. They make the pedestrian bridge a giant snake that you walk through.
It just
needs, already wasted
seriously,
money
it needs
on
to
that
be a thing.
To go. Never mind.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's gonna be terrible to get the cheese out
after
of the,
every
out
home
of
run,
Baxter's
slice,
fur,
slide,
but it'll be worth brewer. It.
Assuming he doesn't get cooked alive like fondue.
Sad news from Phoenix today, as another mascot was roasted alive in his costume. His final words were, go Diamondbacks,
He was reported as being very delicious.
So it's, you know, by that point, we're in, you know, the 15th year of a, you know,
no
Donald Trump dictatorship, and so we have to survive on mascot flesh.
Yeah. I'm just imagining, like,
Dinger
a rundown
like,
abandoned Coors Field, and
like
someone stepping in, like, some urban explorer, and they're kind of looking around, and all of a sudden... like a gunshot goes off and they're looking up in like the rafters or up in the press box and there's like a bearded Dinger with a sniper rifle.
Oh no. I think Dinger goes for the up close kill. He wants to see the terror in their eyes.
So he's more one to strap something around his waist and let it rip.
Yeah, like he will come rappelling down from the upper decks and just drop on you.
Right. He's holding like a knife in his teeth.
In his crazy huge dinosaur teeth.
But yeah, so I think beyond that, I mean obviously from you know the day we're recording this, that was the big Diamondbacks news and pretty much the only
I think it might be
unless like I said, we had a whole hour devoted on who the fifth starter would be, but that just seems kind of empty now.
Oh no! I was skipping. Okay. I'm sorry. I was skipping ahead to like an X-Men type theory where future Dinger travels back in time to join the Diamondbacks. It's like is it Cable who did that? I think. Yeah.
I don't know.
Am I the only person who watched the Fox cartoon X-Men in the 90s? Maybe. It's okay.
I can talk about Nickelodeon game shows.
It was Bishop. I'm sorry. But seriously, how are they making a Legends of the Hidden Temple?
He probably wouldn't be able to get the damn monkey right because none of the kids could.
Have you heard about this? Yeah. Why are you taking a game show? They're turning it into a movie because apparently the best way to
damn it, BuzzFeed 90s nostalgia things.
Are you damning them for the fact that it's being made into a movie or for them not informing you of it?
You know, it could go either way.
Hey, y'all, it's me. As I mentioned at the start of this episode, we recorded 2 weeks ago with Meg Rowley of Lookout Landing, and we had a very fun talk about the Diamondbacks, the Mariners, the Mark Trumbo. But technology is a bastard, and apparently if you have a USB headset and it unplugs while you're recording a Skype call, everything just goes to hell. So lesson learned, I guess. But I did manage to get like 10 or so minutes of good stuff, and I wanted to share it with you all. And we hope to have Meg back on the program soon. You can follow her on Twitter at Meg Rowler, or Meg Rowler, depending on how you look at it. She's a good follow. But, I just wanted to have it so you guys can have this gem of a recording. So, yeah, here's that to end of the episode. Bye.
And also, we have a special guest, like I mentioned before. I want to welcome to the show Meg Rowley, who is a writer for Lookout Landing, an excellent SB Nation Seattle Mariners site, as well as Baseball Prospectus. And she wrote the Mariners part in the BP Annual. So if you have that, check that out. Meg, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. It is a pleasure to have always people other than us, because we usually devolve it to, God, is it usually turtles?
Turtles, yeah. Star Wars questions.
So it's what just kind of turtles all the way down.
All the way down.
All the way down to the types of magic that Miguel Montero uses.
God.
Oh yeah, that was an episode once. Wow. So Meg, since you're a Mariners fan and writer first and foremost, I kind of wanted to ask you, just as a general question, for people who may not follow teams other than the Diamondbacks, because it happens, that's probably most of our listenership, how would you sort of sum up the Seattle Mariners end of last season, off season, going into this season, that sort of thing?
Sure. So I think we had a equally exciting off season as the Diamondbacks, but in a very different sort of way. we did not get a happy surprise in Greinke, but we'll come back to that. The end of last season was kind of a stone cold bummer, to be completely honest. I'm sure that whether they only follow the Diamondbacks or not, your listeners will remember that we were sort of a popular pick to finally break our postseason drought and make our way back where we belong in October, and that that didn't really end up happening. So after 10 years of Jack Cirenzik's reign and management or mismanagement, depending on your opinion of him, he was sort of cast aside, and we brought in Jerry Dipoto to take the organization in a new direction. And he did not waste any time. The Lookout Landing staff was much busier in the offseason than I think we anticipated being, because Jerry seemed determined to churn as much of the bottom of the roster as he possibly could. So there was a lot of activity between sort of the very end of the season and now. And you're seeing it manifest in a lot of different ways. There are, I think there are 18 new guys on the 40-man roster, which is a lot. I think we're getting to the point where we maybe remember all of their names, maybe. And a lot of the sort of longstanding faces that we had come to know and love or ill adore have sort of moved on to different pastures. So it's a very new look Mariner team. We didn't really have a ton of splashy free agent signings. I think in terms of player profile, the biggest one we had was sort of accidental when the Dodgers deal with Hisashi Iwakuma fell through because they were uncomfortable with his medicals, and he ended up coming back to the Mariners on a really team friendly deal. But other than that, it was a lot of trades and small acquisitions to try to fill black holes in the roster, because, you know, I think Jerry has talked a lot about wanting to take advantage of the core that we have now around Felix Hernandez and Robinson Cano and Kyle Seager and Nelson Cruz. And if you have that core of talent, you know, I don't think the organization is really in the mode to tear down and rebuild, but it's obvious that there were upgrades that needed to be made in a number of positions, and Jerry's sought to do that at all hours of the day and on Sundays, so he does not sleep.
So you're basically saying that if you were to describe the Mariners roster last year, it was very, very, very top heavy, because, you know, Felix Hernandez, Robinson Cano, you know, Nelson Cruz too. That's, you know, of a core three players, that's like, that's pretty good, I assume.
I mean, so, diagnosing exactly what went wrong with this team, that's a long story, and we can talk a lot about it over the next, yeah, you know, hour or in therapy for me for the next 10 years. But
I feel like it comes back to Willie Bloomquist.
Oh, poor Willie. I can't believe that Willie Bloomquist, I know that Willie Bloomquist shouldn't be on a major league roster, but it's shocking that Willie Bloomquist is not on a major league roster.
He does feel like a guy who would just say, screw it, just, but yeah. There's,
I kind of thought when the Cardinals had what's his name go down, that Willie might end up just showing up in Florida, being like, you know, I know it's a big step down, but I'm just saying.
like you kind of almost think that Willie Bloomquist is probably somewhere. Like, he might just be wandering from spring training facility to spring training facility, showing up every morning and just hoping he can get some reps in, and that they might just forget and give him a uniform. I feel like that's, I feel like that might be Willie Bloomquist's most plausible experience right now.
I feel bad making fun of Willie Bloomquist, because he's a local dude. He tries really hard.
I feel like Willie Bloomquist, unfortunately, the Mariners' experience with Willie Bloomquist, because, like, I know people who love him from when he was in Seattle, and the Diamondbacks' experience with Willie Bloomquist are not.
He was the starting shortstop, granted, due to a very horrific injury on a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this about Willie. Like, obviously, his best playing days are long behind him, but his name is still brought up a lot by some of the younger guys on our roster who we expect to be key contributors in terms of his guidance and leadership in the clubhouse. And I know that's not a reason to necessarily give a guy a roster spot, but I would not be surprised if he ends up in a coaching or managerial position in pretty short order, because, you know, when I was at Mariners Fan Fest earlier this off season, they had Taiwan Walker kind of given an overview of his season, because he had a real rough start and then came on late and was really, really good in the second half. And they asked him sort of how he dealt with that early failure, and Willie Bloomquist was the first person he brought up in terms of a guy in the clubhouse who really helped him through it and helped him sort of get perspective and manage, you know, that experience start to start. So I don't think baseball has seen the end of Willie Bloomquist, but it's probably seen the end of Willie Bloomquist at shortstop.
Yeah. I remember I went to a Diamondbacks game last year. It was the last game of the season. I remember they specifically took time out, like in the middle of the game between innings on the Jumbotron. They're like, "Hey, it's Willie Bloomquist," and he was like, "Hey, guys."
Yeah,
that is such a Willie Bloomquist story. Oh, Willie!
Oh, Willie!
I feel like that is always kind of the hard thing with players. Like, I always kind of look at baseball as there are people who come at it from two perspectives, and I personally come at it from a much more like person focused as opposed to numbers focused, which it's hard when you get really attached to a player like Willie Bloomquist or Tony Clark is one of the people who comes to mind for me for the Diamondbacks, because he was one of those players who was with the team. He was towards the end of his career. He was kind of like, he was a very vocal presence. He was a, like, he was a good guy, but I mean, he wasn't necessarily playing up to the standards that you want from him. So it's always hard to find that point when it's when you feel okay in, I don't want to say sending him up to a farm upstate, but
wow,
like Trent,
we talked about Hank last week, okay?
Transitioning a player off the field. Okay, there we go. That's a much better way that doesn't make it sound like I just had them killed.
And if I recall correctly, this is, you know, sort of weird Mariners Diamondbacks, you know, things crossing paths. There's a better word for that, but I can't think of it right now. I remember the sort of end of Tony Clark on the Diamondbacks. It was 2009. It was an early game against the Mariners at Safeco, and I think he like botched the tail end of a double play, which caused the winning run to score. And then after that, they were like, "Yeah, let's throw Chad Tracy up there."
Aww.
Yeah. That's how I remember. I could be wrong, and I could frantically Google it, because that's the thing we do, but that sounds about right.
It seems like a story that could be true.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds right.
Sounds about right, yeah. But you mentioned, sort of backtrack a little, you mentioned Jerry Dipoto, and obviously Diamondbacks fans remember him as he was the interim GM between Josh Burns and Kevin Towers, and in hindsight, probably should have been the permanent GM, but ha-ha.
You didn't love Kevin Towers? I'm a nice person, I promise.
He started at 2011, it's like, oh, he fixed the bullpen, and now the team can hold leads late in the games, and, you know, we're sort of doing well, because all the talent's...
It's sort of ironic, though, because, I mean, for his career with the Diamondbacks, he definitely could not hold it together in the later part of it.
Yeah. So it's like, oh yeah, we made the playoffs. Then like, there were obviously things that could be improved with the team, but he just sort of went to the wrong places. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Like, oh hey, we have a fairly good defensive outfield. Let's sign Jason Kubel, even though we're a National League team. Or, you know.
That didn't quite work. Let's get Trumbo.
Yeah.
Never get Trumbo.
No.
Never go full Trumbo.
It's a desperation move.
Yeah. I was going to mention for Jerry Dipoto, for his brief GM tenure with the Diamondbacks, I would say ended pretty positively, even though I think the only player still on the 40-man roster he was responsible for, I think, are Daniel Hudson and Patrick Corbin. But that's not a bad duo.
Uh-uh.
Because Kevin Towers ruined everything else. Not that I'm bitter.
Oh, yeah. But, I've been there, man.